Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, days of protests have been taking place in Iraq. Those demonstrating are complaining about economic pressure as well as corruption. Well, responding to the demands of the people, Iraq's Prime Minister Adel Abdel Mahdi says he is ready to meet with protesters and the government has introduced some reforms. The main question is this all about the problems on the ground in Iraq or about creating more problems in Iraq, especially as the country gears up to host people from all over the world for the largest annual gathering in the world, the Arba'een in March.
Iraq has been witnessing demonstrations in several cities over economic conditions since Tuesday. Protesters are unhappy about high youth unemployment and corruption. Following the rallies, the government announced a series of reforms, including a wide ministerial reshuffle, as well as the formation of a high constitutional body to deal with corruption. The government also says it is ready to listen to the protesters' demands.
We have pointed out some issues that will be discussed in the next session, reforms that could be submitted to the parliament, like countering corruption, financial reforms, job opportunities for the youth, countering poverty, protest law, infrastructure, administrative reforms, and supporting peace and stability in the Iraqi territories.
The rallies began peacefully but quickly turned violent. Some Western and Arab media have tried to magnify the protests to cheer for further rallies and seek their own agenda in the region. Analysts say Iraq's resolve to resist foreign intervention and bullying has placed it in the United States and its allies' bad books.
Coming to this government, Abdel Mahdi, Iraq has secured billions of dollars with China in terms of infrastructure building against the oil. They've refused to slap sanctions on Iran. They're trying to broker a cessation of the Saudi-Iran tensions. They refused MBS and Jared Kushner's plan for Palestine. These are just some of the things that irk the Americans. So there is a real suspicion in the background that because of all these tweets in Saudi Arabia, because of the kind of the general confusion, that this isn't just simply a protest of people for improved economic conditions.
After the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq and its subsequent military presence, which many believe is the root cause of the nation's problems, Iraq has seen challenges one after another.
This is a country which has, which is the fourth richest country in terms of oil reserve. It's a country which could look after its population very, very well. And corruption isn't the cause of that. What is the cause of that is the lasting problem, the legacy of the invasion of Iraq by the Americans and previous to that, the support of Saddam Hussein against the people of Iraq and as an agent to destabilize the region.
The ongoing unrest in Iraq comes as millions of Muslims are preparing for upcoming mourning ceremonies of Arba'een. That's an occasion marking the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam, Imam Hussein. Arba'een has found additional significance in recent years as it has become a rallying cry for the campaign against Takfiri terrorists who have frequently targeted pilgrims. Iraq has brought Daesh terrorists and other foreign-backed militants to their knees following years of fighting. The country seems to be exerting all efforts to bounce back and is on the path of reconciliation. There are, however, shortages in healthcare, education and utility sector, a situation that many believe makes Iraq prone to murky foreign plots and susceptible to security threats.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, independent journalist and researcher Keith Preston out of Richmond, Virginia, and independent national security analyst Brian Downing out of Florida. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start it off with Brian. Of course, the Iraqi people have and are under pressure. They've had years of war and fighting terrorist groups. How much of what is happening now do you think is related to the U.S.'s invasion?
I've lost audio.
An occupation in Iraq. Can you hear me, Brian? Okay, it seems like we're having some audio difficulties out of Florida. Let me pose that same question to you, Keith, in Richmond. Did you hear the question?
And I think much of the difficulty that Iraq is experiencing today is largely rooted in the policies that the United States has pursued towards Iraq for quite some time now. We have to consider the lasting impact of not only the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and the destabilization of Iraq that happened as a result, but we have to consider what happened before that and what has happened since. If we go back to the 1980s, we see that the United States first undertook a program of building up the regime of Saddam Hussein and supporting Iraq's invasion of Iran in 1980 and continuing to arm and finance the regime of Saddam Hussein while he was developing chemical weapons during the 1980s. Right. Then when the split between Iraq and the United States came with the 1990 invasion of Kuwait, then the United States undertook a program of not only expelling, organizing an international coalition to expel Iraq from Kuwait, but also to literally destroy the entire industrial infrastructure and technological infrastructure of Iraq, which had the effect of turning what was once one of the most advanced nations in the Middle East to a pre-industrial state. Then, following the 1991 destruction of Iraq, we have to consider the sanctions, that the extremely harsh sanctions that were imposed on Iraq for a dozen years after that, which resulted in at least hundreds of thousands of deaths, and which essentially prevented any kind of economic development from taking place. Then there was the 2003 invasion of Iraq by the United States, which destabilized the country even further. And then during the time since then, in the 16 years since the 2003 invasion, we have to consider the impact of American policies on Iraq in other ways, not only the war in Iraq and not only the ways in which the United States has armed various insurgent groups and militant groups in Iraq itself, but also the impact of the war in Syria on Iraq and the fact that the United States is efforts to build to develop support for Tekfiri groups in Syria has had an effect on Iraq as well, because that was essentially created the scenario in which the Daesh were able to emerge as an influential insurgent force in the region, which also had the effect of further destabilizing Iraq. And this was something that was happening many years after the original invasion.
Let me get Brian in this conversation. Brian, your take, how much of a role has the United States actually played in what we're seeing today inside of Iraq, especially when we look at the turmoil from time to time, and we look at the economic pressure also?
The American wars in 91, 2003, and the war against ISIL certainly did a lot of damage to Iraq. However, I think I place far more blame on the Iraqi elites themselves. There's, as you noted, there's a lot of oil in that country. The market prices fluctuate. Right now, they're reasonably high by historical standards. And yet, where does all this money go? And I think it is not evenly distributed, not even remotely so. It goes to elites. It goes to cronies of the ruling party, whether it's Maliki or Mahdi or whomever. It's simply not distributed equitably, and that is what the people are protesting. There's also a very serious demographic issue here. I'm not sure of the exact numbers in Iraq, but it's possible that about 55% of the population is maybe under the age of 27. They don't really see any opportunities ahead of them. They do not trust their politicians, and they want some sort of change. They want it now. They are looking around at protests around the world and see that mass participation, sustained mass participation, with the determination to take casualties, that is the way to keep going. Back in the Arab Spring in 2011 up to 13, we saw the Egyptian army shoot down hundreds, maybe about 1,000 Egyptian protesters, and that quelled things. That didn't happen in the Sudan. That didn't happen in Algeria. Shifting out of the area to Hong Kong, it's not happening in Hong Kong. You have a large-scale, determined population. The Iraqi people see that, and they are following in step.
Okay. Well, Keith, your take on that about the demonstrations, how much of it do you think is really organic?
Well, I think that we have to look at that from multiple angles, because mm-hmm. there are multiple things that are converging at the same time. We have to consider that certainly the conditions that the demonstrations are protesting against are rooted, as was said previously, not only in the American policies towards Iraq going back for decades now at this point, but also the ineffectiveness of the current Iraqi government, and as was said, the inability of the government of Iraq to, or unwillingness of the government of Iraq to provide for the people's needs in spite of the oil wealth that exists in Iraq at the present time. And we do see now that protests against this situation are emerging, and I think the previous speaker is correct in the sense that the protest movements that have been witnessed in recent years and in very recent months even around the world and other places most likely have had some kind of impetus for this, in the sense that if we look at what has happened in Hong Kong, if we look at what has happened in France with the Yellow Vests, we see a somewhat similar situation. However, we also have to consider that in many situations like this, the Western forces will often attempt to co-opt insurgent movements or protest movements for their own benefits. And we've seen evidence of that happening in Iraq, in Iraq, but also in Hong Kong. In Hong Kong, we've seen, for example, that while, yes, there are conflicts between the people of Hong Kong and the government of China, that goes without saying, we've also seen the Western interests in trying to take advantage of these particular protests and hijack them for their own purposes and use them as a weapon against a geopolitical and economic rival. And we saw that happen during the Arab Spring as well. We saw the Obama administration trying to use the Arab Spring as a weapon against countries in which they wanted regime change in the region. And now a similar process is likely unfolding in Iraq as well, because the Americans have not been happy. The American foreign policy elites have not been happy with the course that the Iraqi government has taken in recent years. They don't like the fact that, for example, a fairly short time ago, a coalition of Shia Muslims and communists or leftists were elected in Iraq. They don't like the fact that the current Iraqi government is seen as being too friendly or at least accommodating to Iran. They don't like the fact that Iraq is largely part of the wider axis of resistance against Saudi influence in the region as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's an issue there in the sense that Western forces, along with the Western allies in the region, particularly Saudi Arabia and Israel, of course, see this as a means, see the protest as a means of destabilizing Iraq itself.
Well, let me get Brian back in on this. Brian, your take on what Keith has just said. As far as one, Iraq and Iran's relationship, it's an alliance. And of course, I mentioned in the introduction, actually, within a couple of weeks, the largest annual gathering in the world is going to be taking place in Iraq, where we have people coming in from all over the world, all colors, all languages spoken, and this overall sense of unity. And commitment against oppression and fighting oppression. I want to look at all of that and how much all of this can possibly play also into what we're seeing over there today.
Well, the other guest rightly pointed out that foreign countries like to intervene in these situations. And obviously one of the more key players in the region is Saudi Arabia. The Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, has done very badly in Syria. He's done very badly in Yemen. And he may be seeking to get things on the right track, as he sees them, by intervening in Iraq, intervening diplomatically. He's never going to send troops there. He knows his army is not very effective. The Houthis showed that. He does have support from the Sunnis, at least some of them. They feel oppressed. They were the dominant ethnic group under Saddam Hussein and previously under the Hashemite kings. They want more power. They want more authority. They want more privileged positions. They may try to get him to do that, but it's not simply Sunnis. Remember, there's a key player in Iraq named Muqtada al-Sadr, the descendant of a large line of distinguished Shia clerics. He has met with Mohammed bin Salman. I think the Saudis are trying to get him on board. They don't really like dealing with Shias, of course, but it's not a perfect world anywhere. But he did meet, Muqtada al-Sadr did meet with Mohammed bin Salman a few months ago, and shortly thereafter, his militias attacked and burned an Iranian consulate in Basra. That's pretty strange. It makes me think that he has come to some sort of accommodation. Interestingly, Muqtada al-Sadr does not place his own name into the list of parliamentary candidates. He's staying above the fray. He wants to be a power broker, and I might go on to speculate that given he is from a long line of Shia clerics, he sees himself as becoming the next chief Ayatollah of Iraq. The present one, al-Sistani, is very aged and very infirm, and Sadr, I think, is aiming for that position, not something as mundane as a prime ministership or a seat in parliament.
Well, Keith, when we look at these demonstrations that have been taking place, so we have reports from the Iraqi government is that a lot of the people who have been killed have actually by sniper fire. And the government said today that there were no orders for the police to actually shoot or fire upon the protesters. It does seem like a classic situation that we've seen in so many other countries, basically protesters being targeted. We saw television stations and specific television stations being targeted as if to create even more chaos. Your take on that for many in the region, actually looking at this, we've seen this so often try to be carried out in various countries. Part of this looks quite familiar.
Yeah, well, it appears that there are forces involved in this situation that are interested in creating destabilization in Iraq. Obviously, when there's a popular uprising, that creates instability on a general level. I mentioned earlier how there are various external forces that like to take advantage of these kinds of situations. And of course, it's certainly not inconceivable and quite likely that there are currently within Iraq various forces operating to see this as an opportune moment where they may be able to undermine the stability of the current Iraqi government for various reasons, depending on what their own objectives are or whom they're aligned with. Now, I do think it's interesting that the Shia forces that are associated with al-Sadr have sort of developed a position of, I guess you could say, working both ends against the middle, in the sense that they are, they are Shia, they are not Sunni, they are long-standing rivals of the Sunni forces in Iraq. Certainly they were rivals to the Ba'athist forces for quite some time. They've certainly been rivals to the Daesh. They are not generally friendly towards the Saudis. However, they may view the current government of Iraq as being a common enemy between themselves and the Saudis, and for that reason, they may consider the Saudis to be tactical allies against the current government of Iraq. One thing that's interesting about the geopolitics of the entire region is the way that these alliances are constantly shifting, because there's so many contending forces and so many different interests at stake. So it's also possible that there are other forces that are at play in Iraq that are also trying to create a situation that destabilizes the government. We can't rule out the possibility of forces that are aligned with or loyal to the Daesh or other similar tech theory groups, seeing this as a moment in which they can take advantage of the situation. We have to also have to consider pro-Western forces and pro-Israeli forces as well. There's all kinds of different elements that might have a stake in trying to escalate the situation and escalate the level of tension and conflict.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me get Brian in on this. We're just about out of time. But Brian, your take, what is it going to take in your perspective now to de-escalate the situation in Iraq?
I think some very serious political reforms, probably a fundamental change in government, perhaps replacing Mahdi with a broader coalition, and probably trying to keep Saudi Arabia out of too much interference in the country.
Okay, and your take on the same question, Keith?
Well, I would largely agree with what was just said in the sense that if there's going to be any kind of positive developments in the future of Iraq, Saudi Arabia has to remain out of the picture. Saudi Arabia destroys everything it touches. We see that as a result of the Saudi involvement in Yemen. We see what Saudi Arabia is doing in the Eastern province. In its own country, we see what the results of the Saudi influence in Syria was. We even see what's happening in terms of the relationship between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. So first of all, to the degree that there's Saudi influence involved in there, that's the first thing that really has to be opposed. And then I think also we have to be concerned about other external forces using the situation as a means of destabilizing Iraq, whether it's the Daesh, whether it's pro-Israel forces, whether it's pro-Western forces. This is a problem, obviously, that the people of Iraq have to solve for themselves, and making sure that external forces of whatever kind are not involved in trying to interfere in the process and create destabilization for the sake of advancing their own interests is really the key issue that's at stake here. Okay. In an immediate sense.
All right, and on that note, I thank both of you for being with us on this debate. Independent journalist and researcher Keith Preston out of Richmond, Virginia, and independent national security analyst Brian Downing out of Florida. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. Well, I'm Marcia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the group right here in Tehran. Hope to see you next time.